Ah, sure is. And don't forget, our you looked at death line at 818-817-0021. Hey, don't forget, right before you go to bed Saturday night, turn your clocks back an hour if you are in one of the states that participates in daylight saving time, because we are going off it. That means it's going to get darker an hour earlier. It's winter time right around the corner, so just fall back 1 hour. It officially takes effect on Sunday at 2 a.m. in the morning, but you go to bed Saturday, turn it back an hour, and it'll be all set for you when you wake up in the morning. How many people forget to change their clocks or their watches? Unbelievable. Okay, we're going to come back and finish up the hour with Ghost to Ghost on Coast to Coast AM. And scream indeed you will, won't you? Hey, don't forget, we've got a two-day extravaganza for you. So Dave Schrader will be manning the Ghost to Ghost desk tomorrow night, and he's got some great stories for you as well, and we'll take your calls too. So you get double nights of some Halloween great programs here on Ghost to Ghost and Coast to Coast. Now we go to the phones again. Let's go to the Let's see, the wildcard line. Rick is in Tilbury, Ontario, Canada. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hey, George, it is an honor to talk to you. I have listened to this program since the Art Bell days, and you guys are like old friends to me.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you.
All right, this story, I'm just going to preface it with this. It's gospel truth. This happened to me, and this is one of the reasons why you should not mess with a Ouija board. Put your Ouija boards away, people. Get rid of them. Anyway, story is, I'm coming back from Florida with my wife. We stopped in St. Mary's, Ohio. We had friends there. And they lived in this house, and this house was four stories, 150 years old, stone, beautiful, full of antiques, gorgeous place. Known to be haunted, of course. I am a paranormal investigator. I've always been into the paranormal. And anyway, of course, so I got questioning them on the house and what the house was doing. And stories came up, what was going on. The daughter said how there was lots of noises when she would go to take a shower, stairway, invisible people on stairways. Then the Ouija board came up. Turned out, at one point, there was 30 kids after school would land in their house, and they would all be working the Ouija board. And
things
just got crazy, shaking chandeliers, the whole deal. The mother said, okay, that's it. It goes away, no more. So it went away, and it never came back out again. So, of course, I had to say, look, I've never seen one work. I'd like to see something happen. Could we try it? She hummed and hawed, and she was like, all right. She went and got it. I sat down across from the daughter. Her name was Renee. We put it on our laps and put our fingers on it. Immediately, it started moving. Slowly, nice pace. And like I said, Renee had commented about the sounds when she took a shower. So I said, who in the house makes sounds when Renee is showering? Supposedly a 10-year-old boy came on, and he said he liked to watch her undress. I could see this happen. If I was a 10-year-old boy, I'd want to watch Renee undress too. So anyway, we spoke to the little boy for a little while. All of a sudden, he said, I have to go. And we said, where are you going? It's coming. We said, who's coming? He's coming. All of a sudden, the planchette stopped.
Uh-oh.
We looked at each other, and we're like, what is going on here? All of a sudden, it took off like wildfire. We had to work to keep our fingers on it. It was almost impossible to get answers from it because it was moving so fast. And at some point, it would pull away from your fingers. And the minute it lost your fingers, it would stop dead. And then our fingers would grab it again, and off it would go again. It was just ridiculous. My wife was a real naysayer. She was actually saying a lot of stuff she shouldn't say. We were getting the idea. It was getting angry. And I said, stop. Just quit speaking. It is getting really ticked off. So we said, look, we don't want to talk to you anymore. You are unfriendly. Go away. We want to speak to somebody else. And then it would lie. It would come back, and it would say it was other people. But we knew it was it because of the way the planchette moved. It was 100 miles an hour.
It tried to trick you? Wow.
Oh, yeah, they lie. That's another reason that these things are so bad. They'll tell you they're one thing, and they're something totally different. So anyway, at that point, the mother, Pat, she said, okay, you know what? We've seen enough. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I've seen it work. I am impressed. It works. We put the Ouija board away. So that evening, we went to bed. We stayed at their house that night. And anyway, I woke up in the middle of the night, and it was not as if you just woke up and you were groggy and tired. I opened my eyes and I was wide awake. Now, I didn't have a clock near, but I'm going to say I put my life. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, because that's when that stuff always happens.
That happens anyway, at three. Yeah.
I leaned up on my elbow, and this is gospel truth. There was an 8-foot cloaked creature standing in the corner of the room. It was not facing me. It was facing off to the right. I could not see its face. It was blocked by this cloak. It had two approximate 2-foot tall imp type creatures that were kind of moving in and out of its robes on the floor. They almost had a reptilian look to them, and they did have black cloth. Now here's the other weird part that you really got to picture. As they went through this thing's robes, they did not move the robe. They went through the robe as if it was a waterfall. The robe just kind of disappeared around the creature. The creature went through, popped out the other side, and then continued its little motion. It looked like death, actually, minus the sickle. I looked at it in disbelief, and I thought, dear God, what is that? And I laid my head down. I stuck my face into my wife's back, and I just said to myself, I am not moving until I see daylight. And then the next thing I did see was daylight, and I looked, the thing was gone, and I swear to God, that is gospel truth. And I'm telling you, it's the last time I used a Ouija board. I will never touch one again.
Good for you, Rick. Don't use them. Gary's in Butte Falls, Oregon. Welcome to the show. Gary, go ahead, sir. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, sir, for taking my call.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Real quick, I need to say that I'm disabled now, but I used to be a truck driver. And like your last caller, I started out with Art Bell, mm-hmm. then you and your other honored hosts.
Thank you.
And helped me get through many hundreds of thousands of miles.
Thank you so much.
Y'all, you're welcome. It's a great honor to talk to you. I had a very dear friend to the family, back in 2008, he was an older gentleman. He turned out to be my spiritual teacher, but he was, passing away. And so I got a call from my stepsister that that's what was happening. So I went to her house and, to pay my respects to him, and he was awake and alert. But I noticed a lot of people, friends and family members, are coming to do the same thing. And my sister told me what was going on. And I don't know, maybe if I can explain it or you can explain it better, but you know about hospice?
Yes, exactly.
And can you do a better job than me?
Well, very quickly, hospice, of course, someone's dying. People generally will come to your house and aid that person and assist them until they pass on.
Correct. And so the nurses of hospice are coming to my sister's house and guiding us in that direction. And so we're giving him medication to keep him comfortable and help him pass. And so when my sister told me about this, because I wasn't really knowledgeable about it, and all the people coming and stuff, I said, oh, okay, cause like I said, I was disabled. I've got time. My sister's got a family. She's married, 3 kids. All the kids or all the people coming over. This is too much of a burden for my sister.
Sure.
So I volunteered to hang out, stay for the duration. And I ended up making a bed on the floor next to our friend.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah. And because I had to, or we had to administer every 4 hours. And so I'm laying on the floor, And this happened like for 3-4 nights because I'm disabled. I don't get much sleep, especially on the floor. And in the middle of the night, and this is no joke, George, no joke, if I can call you George.
Thank you. Of course you can.
Appreciate it. In the middle of the night, it sounded like somebody was walking up the hall into the doorway of the bedroom. That happened a couple of times every night, and I would tell my sister every day, is anybody up walking around, the kids or whatnot? Because now this is a creaking sound, right?
Like and you know footsteps when you hear it, right?
Absolutely. And I'm laying on the floor, and I only have a blanket. And I'm sensitive because I'm disabled.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel the creaking.
Oh, boy. Okay, something physical then. You can feel that.
I look up because the creaking stops what should be the front of the doorway of the bedroom. Always.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept telling my sister this, and, you know, it took a little bit longer to help our friend pass away. The hospice nurses came and doubled the dosage. And I told my sister, like I told you, I kept telling my sister about this creaking. And I told her, I said, you know, the nurse came, we doubled the dose. It's not going to be too much longer. So she, with interest about the creaking, and maybe wanting to be next, like me, if it happened during the night, if our friend passed away, to be there. And so she slept next to me, which our friend's in a hospital bed. She laid right next to his bed and next to me on the floor, and then me. And in the middle of the night, it happened.
Did she? And she heard it?
She heard it. She raised up. I raised up. I looked at her. She scooted next to me. And then the next day, the end of the story is that with the double dosages, he finally passed.
But I wonder if it was death coming to take that person.
It's a wonder because this friend, like I told you, he was my spiritual teacher. He spent 8 years in a Buddhist monk, so he practiced Buddhism and Hinduism. He taught us about reincarnation and the spiritual life.
I mean, it sounded to me, Gary, that death was on literally her doorstep. And his doorstep, and bang, took them at the right time. Thanks for that story. We've got Carl now in Milwaukee. Welcome to the show. Carl, it's your turn.
Good morning, George.
Hi, good morning to you.
While I was waiting on hold, I came up with kind of a title to my story, and I call it The Power of Love.
All right.
And I've only shared this just with my immediate family. My dad passed away about 3 years ago, and my dad was a very prayerful man. My mom and my dad had one of those relationships where they were high school sweethearts. My dad would buy flowers for my mom all the time. When they were in their 70s, and my dad passed away when he was 84. They would hold hands. My dad would write poetry for my mom. It was a true
love story.
It was. It was. And when my dad finally passed away, my mom, of course, was just absolutely devastated, despondent. And I'm lucky enough to live in the neighborhood where I could spend time with my mom when she was so lonely. And about a month passed, and my mom called me and said, could you come over? I want you to help me go through some of your father's things. And I said, sure, Mom. And so I went over, and we went into their bedroom, and right there next to the bed, my father's side of the bed, was his chair, and he had on the clothes that he wore, you know, right before he went into the hospital, and mm-hmm. it was, you know, the tennis shoes with the Velcro things, like a sweater, and my dad was thin and frail, so he had like a pair of jeans, and a lot of times you'll see old people, like an older fellow, will have suspenders on just to kind of help hold up his, you know, to help hold up your pants, your trousers. And my mom always would be very careful about my dad not, you know, stressing him. So my mom wouldn't even let my dad carry his house keys in his pants pocket. So we're going through some of my mom, through my dad's things. And suddenly my mom starts crying. And I said, "Mom, what's the matter?" And she was over by, you know, my dad's chair where he had his clothes that he wore right before he went to the hospital and passed away. Well, George, like I mentioned before, my mom refused to let my dad carry anything that would tax his body. So his pockets were empty. Well, George, my mom was weeping, and she was pointing to my dad's clothes. And I went over there. I picked up my dad's pants that he was wearing. And in each pocket, the two front pockets, George, and the two back pockets were full of change. I mean, you couldn't stuff any more change in there, George. And there were Mercury head dimes, Buffalo head nickels,
jeez,
the silver quarters. And they were literally, his pants pockets were full. And my mom was weeping. And my dad was one of those guys I mentioned before who was very prayerful. He was one of those Irishmen that just people loved. And I knew that my dad, if anybody could be sitting up there in heaven and make a deal with St. Peter where he could come down and give my mom a sign, it was my dad.
He did that with the change. I love that. We're going to come back with final ghost-to-ghost stories next. I got to tell you, that song is as creepy as some of the stories we've heard tonight, huh? Well, we're going to come back with a final segment of your ghost-to-ghost calls here in just a moment. Tom's got our final text message here on Ghost to Ghost. What do we have, Tommy?
Yes, this one is from Brian in Maine. "Hey, George, I work in a crematory burning bodies." I burn bodies. "Do you think these souls could possibly feel discomfort from the other side?"
I hope not.
What a question.
What if when you die and they bury you, you're kind of like still alert? So, you know, you could literally feel yourself being put in the coffin, buried. Still, what a horrible feeling.
Did you see The Vanishing?
Yeah.
With Sandra Bullock and Kiefer Sutherland.
Yep.
Buried alive.
Horrible story.
It is terrible.
I hate to do it. What if you feel these things, even in your death state?
You're never going to know until you die.
You don't. Okay, hey, thanks. Let's go back to the phones. Alex in Tempe, Arizona. Alex, welcome to the program, sir.
Hello, George. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Loud and clear.
Oh, right on. Hey, I've been listening to your show, your program, since I've been also.
Great.
You guys are really interesting. I learned a lot. This experience that I had, my mom passed away. In fact, it'll be next month in November. 25 years ago, she had cancer. Okay. And what was really strange about it, she was already in the hospital. I took care of her before then. I had taken care of her for about a whole month. And then it got to a point where she was getting really, really bad that she had to go to the hospital and be taken care of. And what was strange was when I finally got the call that she was going to pass away, my family told me to come down and, you know, she wanted to see you or talk to you. She wanted you there.
Yeah.
And I didn't really understand how she knew that she wanted me there because she was so induced with morphine. She had cancer in the pancreas really bad. But she was still in a talkable state, but mumbling, okay? And
sure.
By the time my girlfriend and I went to the hospital, I saw her. She was already out. And I stayed for like about a half hour. And the rest of the family was there, and I couldn't handle being there at the hospital. So I told my girlfriend, come on, let's go home. I can't stay for the end over here, so I need to go home. So I went home. And my girlfriend went with me. We got to the house. She went in the back room where we had the family room. I was in there with her. She says, well, I'm going to lay down. I'm really worn out, you know. And I said, yeah, I am too. I'm going to go take a shower. So I got done with the shower. I went to shave my face. I was in the hallway. She decided to lay down on the couch. She passed out because I went in to check on her, and I went to get a towel and everything. And she was just laying there. And I went back, got done shaving. When I was looking at the mirror faces me, but behind me would face the doorway that was already open. And I'm sitting there shaving my face, and it felt like somebody, or it seemed like somebody was walking behind me, or walked behind me towards the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
And what was really strange was that it was only me and my girlfriend there. And all of a sudden I hear these dishes rattling around. And I thought, well, the person that came by was probably her. Maybe she got up and was moving some things around. So I just ignored it, got done shaving, washed my face. And I went in the kitchen to go get a glass of water. And what was weird, I thought she was in there, but I said, man, I didn't see her go back to the room. Okay. So I turn around and go back to the back room. She's laying in the same position that I left her when I went in to take a shower.
Yeah. She hadn't moved at all.
No, she hasn't moved at all. And that was really weird. So I go over there and I wake her up and I said, Debbie, were you just in the kitchen? And she goes, no, I've been laying here. And she goes, well, you know what's weird? I passed out and I was laying here and I was talking to somebody. I said, who are you talking to? She says, I don't know, but I had this weird talking to a person named Peter. I said, Peter? And she goes, yeah, you know anybody named Peter? But see, she doesn't know the rest of my family. I have an Uncle Peter that used to live in New York.
Okay.
And he was a high school teacher. Well, during that year in 1990, he died that summer in a car accident.
Okay.
God. And that's the only person I knew that she knew named Peter, because I never heard of anybody named Peter except for my uncle. And she doesn't know Peter. She doesn't know him by name or anything. It's just kind of like, this is what she dreamt.
Yeah.
Okay. Or whatever she was thinking of. I don't know. And I said, do you know what he looks like? Well, when I was talking to him, he was telling me to tell you, do not worry. We're all waiting for Trina, which was my mom's name, that we're all waiting for her. And tell him not to worry, that she's going to be fine.
That's
amazing.
We're
all going to be waiting for her. And I said, you're kidding. And she goes, no. And I thought, you know, she's playing with me, right? So I said, okay, what does he look like? Well, he, when I seen him and talked to him, he was like looking out the doorway out at a balcony. I said, a balcony? And she goes, yeah. Well, see, years ago, my mom and I and her sister, my aunt, we used to go to New York a lot to go visit my uncle, and he took us all over the place. I went to Yankee Stadium and all that. He took me out.
Yeah,
I even
yeah.
saw Janis Joplin. Anyway, what was weird was that when she said the balcony, the only thing I could think of was him and his best friend. They went in and invested in this building, which was a 10-story building, and each room they were going to turn it into an apartment.
Uh-huh.
And they had French doors that opened, and there was little balconies on the outside
yep.
where you could put two or three people out there, and you could look over the city. And I started freaking out. I said, you sure you've never seen Uncle Peter, or my mom hasn't mentioned it to you, or seen pictures of him? And she goes, no. So I gave her the family album. So I said, look through here.
Pick him out.
Show me
yeah.
where's Uncle Peter. So she went to look through the pages. She passed Uncle Peter, like, I swear, she passed Uncle Peter like maybe 7-8 times. Until she found a picture of him looking out the balcony, just how she pictured it.
Wow.
And wearing that tan sport coat.
So she probably just saw maybe like the back of him or something.
Yeah, it was weird. And I said, and she pointed it out. She goes, is this him right here? This is him standing at the balcony. And it showed a picture. he had a picture taken of him looking out the balcony, and he was wearing that tan sport coat, just like she saw him. And what was really weird after that was that we both came back in the room, and I said, do you have the oven on? And she goes, no, why? I said, I smell apple turnovers. I said, what? Apple turnovers. And I, you know, my mom used to cook a lot. She used to like to make apple turnovers.
Yeah.
And so I go in the kitchen, I touch the oven, and the oven was warm. And the oven hasn't been on for weeks.
Wow. And that, I bet, is when she passed, right then.
Yep, I think so.
That's what it was.
And also we had a little bell on the door, and we would hear this bell ring like somebody was coming in and out. And she heard it too. And we go out there, and the door's locked. We got deadbolt. And there's no way that door could have opened with the bell ringing.
I love it.
So it was really strange. But it only happened that one night when she passed away, and then we never heard anything.
That's, you know, Alex, that's all you need is that one time. That's it. I love it. Now let's go to Richard in Louisiana looking at death. Richard, welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you. You're
very welcome.
I guess I'll just tell you what happened.
Already?
First time caller. Love the show.
Thank you.
Anyway, like I told the other guy, about 2004, it was on my nephew's birthday, October 21st. We're both October kids, so, you know, Halloween's always been one of my favorite times. But a friend of mine and I had just gotten off work, and we were going to New Orleans from Kentwood, about a 80-mile trip. And we started off right at dark, and it was probably from here to Ponchatoula where the interstate goes to a high-rise interstate for about the next 20-something miles in the New Orleans. The state had been working on the bottom of the, where you go up onto the high-rise from the road surface on Interstate 55 South. And they had these big, giant concrete barriers blocking off, like, the passing lane where the Interstate 10-12 connected.
Okay.
And everyone was coming from, like, Baton Rouge trying to go towards New Orleans on 55. And apparently, before we had gotten to that spot, there was a major accident right at the foot of the bridge. I mean, at the foot of the interstate where you get up on the high-rise part. And everybody was slowed down, like, 45, 40 miles an hour, bumper to bumper. The cars coming from Ponchatoula side were all just parked and crooked all over the on-ramp coming up to the one lane to get onto the bridge where it opened back up to two. And I'm watching this barricade that's, you know, almost hitting my mirror. I had a 96 Chevy Lumina, and we had the windows down, beautiful fall day, well, afternoon, you know, it was twilight had just passed.
Oh, the best weather then, the best.
Yeah, it was beautiful. We had the windows down, and, you know, we were just relaxing. I wasn't in any hurry. And we were going to see my niece in Westwego on the West Bank, and she had just lost her husband probably less than four weeks prior to this. And it was kind of like a, you know, check on her, see how she's doing, let's go eat with her brother and my friend and all, just a family kind of thing. So we were got up on the bridge, you know, and when we passed the wreck, my friend kept telling me, man, I think somebody's, you know, met their end in that ditch there. And I was like, he was like, look at him. I couldn't look, but I did see one vehicle. It was about four or five vehicles involved. And one of them was just torn in half.
I mean, God.
Yeah, it had taken a real bad
hit. They were dead.
Apparently, he kept saying that somebody's dead in that ditch. They're covered with jackets, you know. And,
yeah.
And I was like, I can't look, or we're going to be in that ditch.
Yeah.
So we get up onto the bridge to the high-rise part, and, you know, I don't know if you've ever been through here. I'm sure you have probably, but the bridge is separated from the other lane, which is going north. There's two lanes on the east side of it going north. And there was nobody on either bridge. Everybody traveling with us just, like, left us. And I set my cruise on 60. And I get into the fast lane, which I'm up against the bridge railing. And it's not very tall. It probably came up to the mirrors on the car right below. And I forget all about the wreck. But he's still kind of consumed by it because I guess what he's seen.
Yeah.
And he's a little concerned, you know, about everything. And I look across the interstate, And the off-ramp of the other side, there was a state trooper sitting underneath the lights. They have about 8 lights, I guess, leading up to the off-ramp when you're coming out of, like, from Man Shack that way, headed north. And I asked him, I said, would you like me to take my cell phone and call this in? You know, and he was like, no, plenty of people were on their phones and all. And I was like, well, look, that state trooper's over there with his inside lights on, playing with a clipboard. I would say he was probably a half mile up the road from us at this time. And he was like, no, plenty of people were calling. I was like, well, apparently this accident just happened because, I mean, he's not even a half mile from the scene. We almost got clipped with all the traffic and sure. No cops were there, you know? And yeah, so I was, you know, wondering if maybe I should drop a dime. And about that time, he was like, no, it's all good. Well, I was looking at the state trooper, and I have pretty good vision. I've been tested a few times. I was told I had pilot's eyes by an old Army doctor.
I've got a minute left for you, so go ahead.
Oh, okay, well, long story short, I see this mist between the bridges. Looks like a bunch of mosquitoes or bugs flying around.
Jeez.
And I'm thinking, you know, love bug season's over. And I ask him, what is that big mass that's swirling around in between the bridges, all that black debris in the air? And he starts looking at it. He's like, I don't know. What is that? And we get to watching it through the lights, and it's kind of behind the police car on our side of the bridges, right outside the railing where I'm approaching. And all of a sudden, the little bugs get bigger and bigger, and they start swirling faster, and they become these square, black, smoky blotches, and they just swirl like a tornado, and there he is, hanging outside the bridge. And as soon as he materialized, if you ever seen the movie Gothica, where Halle Berry's looking through the window at
yeah.
the girl, and
yeah.
all of a sudden she moves real fast, and she's right next to her? Well, he came about 50 yards alongside that bridge and hung right outside my window on the other side of the railing, floating backwards.
Jeez.
Yeah.
You saw death. You literally saw death. Well, this is going to wrap up our Ghost to Ghost for 2015. But you know what? We've got some more holidays coming right down. And don't forget Dave Schrader, of course, with his special Saturday night show for us on Coast to Coast AM. Well, for Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.